Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer. We're coming to you live from Roberta's Restaurant in Bushwick, Brooklyn. It is Wednesday, June 18th. This is the 24th episode of this series, which is dedicated to behind-the-scenes talents in the hospitality industry. Okay, now today we're going to be talking press trip thrills and nightmares, hopefully more thrills, with one of the co-authors of a new novel called The Junketeers. But first, as I do on every show, I will start with my PR tip, and then later we will have my speed round questions, industry news discussion, solo dining experience, and the final question. As the founder of Bayer Public Relations, I'm going to tip off the show with my PR tip of the week. Okay, today's tip is inspired by my guest's book. The tip is to be good company and not be, quote-unquote, the one. You see, in The Junketeers, the one refers to the person on a press trip who basically annoys the others by complaining, getting sloppy drunk, or being a know-it-all. No one wants to be with this type of individual, as they are seen as a nuisance. Rather, everyone wants to be with someone who is pleasant, easy to get along with, humble, responsible, a good listener, and a team player. So I say aim to be that nice person, and not just in social settings, but in everyday life. You'll make more friends and go farther. That's my tip today. All right, I'm really excited about my show because I have one of the co-authors of The Junketeers here. It is Julie Bessonin, and her co-author is Baroness Sherry de Borgrave.
De Borgrave.
Still got it wrong. Sherry couldn't make it today, but I'm going to let me read a little of their bios so you all know a little more about them. Okay, so Julie is a writer living in New York City. She is a graduate of the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville.
Or we say Fedville.
I never heard of Fayetteville before reading this bio incorrectly.
I'm an Arkansas Razorback.
And then this is interesting. You were also a Fulbright scholar to Belgium. Mm-hmm. In addition to being the food editor at Paper Magazine, Julie contributes to nycgo.com and the New York Times. Sherry, a.k.a. Baroness, is the author of a steamy memoir, A Dangerous Liaison, about her romance and marriage to a Belgian baron and what goes on behind castle walls. She writes the wine and spirits column for CNG Publications and has contributed travel articles on exotic island travel to Rob Report, Islands, and Brides. She wrote a sex advice column called The Bedroom Baroness for Cosmopolitan and worked in-house at Condé Nast Traveler and GQ. She's taken over 80 press trips all over the world. So, steamy bio there. So welcome, Julie. Thank you so much for coming out here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I've known you as... Well, why don't we back up a little before The Junketeers and talk. How'd you get into food writing and your career now as a columnist for the New York Times, NYC Go, all these exciting things, and Paper Magazine?
I always loved to eat. I always wanted to be a writer, and I didn't even realize you could put the two things together for a long time. When I lived in Brussels, that was really an eye-opening experience to all the different cuisines of the world. It's just a very international city. And then I moved to New York, and I was pursuing writing, and I first became more of an entertainment writer. And oftentimes those interviews would be conducted at restaurants. And then when I would turn in the story, I had two different editors at the same time around the same month, I think, tell me, I think you should be a food writer, because I talked more about the food and the restaurant and what we'd had to eat and drink. And I obviously was more passionate about that than who I'd interviewed. So it kind of just grew organically that way.
And about when was this? How long
ago? Oh, 90s, okay. 1990s.
Mm-hmm. And I hadn't known until now that you had lived in Brussels, and you... It's interesting, after this event, I have do you know X-Key from...
I read your press release, but
oh, okay.
I don't know it, no.
Well, they're a Belgium restaurant group that has over 75 locations in Europe, and they're launching in New York City, and we're doing a party tonight. So, and it's also interesting that Sherry has the Baroness Belgium connection. There's a lot of Belgium Brussels things going on here.
I think that was one of our connections when we first met, too.
Well, I was going to ask you. So, how did you meet, and then how did you come to write this book together, The Junketeers?
We met actually on a press trip to Poland, and this was back in the aughts at some point. It was a vodka trip, and I just immediately recognized what a funny character she was, and I really enjoyed hanging around her in Warsaw and Krakow, and. One night, we stayed up late at the hotel where we were staying and had a nightcap and started to exchange stories of some of the people that we'd traveled with and knew in common, and they became just horror stories, you know, exchanging one after another of the ones, what you were bringing up, you know, people who'd been real divas on trips or that we knew in common on the circuit in New York. And we realized that we had something there, that it would make a good collaboration for a writing project.
Yeah, well, I started reading the book. I can't wait to finish because it's really an exciting read and to get an inside look at these press trips. And it starts out with, well, this is the question. How much of the book is based on reality or is it inspired by your trips? Because I think it starts out in Poland, right?
That is the first trip.
And that was your...
There's a grain of truth to all of it. Most of it is based on Sherry's experiences with press trips because I stopped taking them several years ago, and Sherry has taken so many of them, and so she just had a wealth of material. And so a couple of the most exciting chapters, one where she goes to Java to become the third wife of the Sultan there, which is it's just this cockamamie idea that she has, and my character has to go to rescue her. I've never been to Java. And then there was another chapter that was really fun to work on where our characters went to a deserted island in Fiji. And it was based on truth. Sherry went on a trip where it turned out to be a deserted island that was haunted by an evil tiki run by an alcoholic princess. She had a hermaphrodite butler who was always trying to hit her up for money. That he needed to buy cigarettes, and it was just the most outrageous story I'd ever heard, and I thought, this is going in the book. And so I feel like I've been to that place, but I haven't.
Well, I mean, just from the first story and reading the characters, so the characters, you have Marin, which Marin, who I believe is your character, based on your character, and the Countess, Jackie, because knowing you guys and reading it and knowing a bit about your personalities, I could see them in a little bit reflected in these characters.
My character is food obsessed. And Sherry's character is always looking for the local talent in each location we go to. Meaning, you know, she's pretty racy. She's a much more racy character than mine. My character is a little more straight-laced, and I try to learn from her. She takes me under her wing, and it has somewhat disastrous consequences because my character is just not as sophisticated or wise as her character is. So she just can't deal with some of the situations very well. But she gets herself into some messes.
I can't wait to read the rest. why don't we talk about what press trips are and how you get invited on these? And you said you're not doing them anymore because they're...
Well, for a couple of reasons, back in the aughts, I can't remember, like mid-2000s, my career started to go better, and I started to get so many writing assignments, I really couldn't leave on a press trip anymore. when I started at NYC Go several years ago, I was writing up to 20 restaurants a month for them in New York, and I had to be in touch with my editors all the time. And with press trips, they're all consuming. When you go away, you barely have time to check email. And so I just couldn't go away on a press trip and work. And so I stopped back then, and then also when I started to do more writing for the New York Times, they forbid taking comps. So I, yeah.
No,
it's in
more.
My past.
I hear you. But just, and from reading it, I saw the first trip you took, and you really wanted it, or the character really wanted a nap. And it was just you, as soon as you arrived,
go.
It was go, go, go. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you had a full itinerary.
Mm-hmm. These trips are nonstop. And a lot of it is wonderful, too. You just get to see and do mm-hmm. so many things that you would never normally get to do in real life. And I just love the access that it gave me. If I went to a winery, I would meet with the winemaker, the owner of the estate, and you just have a different experience than if you go there as a normal traveler. But to be invited on these trips, you have to have a track record. Not just anybody gets to go. You have to have published and have a place to also cover the story. So it's I'm not sure if they're still as strict. Back in the day that I was doing them, everyone wanted ink or something in print. They wouldn't accept an online placement for their product, be it vodka, be it a wine region, be it a hotel destination. But now I hear that they've realized that bloggers also have influence, and so it online publications also are valid, and so those people get to go on them too. And so you just have to be able to show that it's worth it to spend a bunch of money on you, that you're going to come through with a story promoting whatever it is.
Yeah, I was wondering, you answered my question, like what the expectations were, mm-hmm. because they are putting you up and out on a...
Well, I think they usually probably spend a few thousand per mm-hmm. journalist, you know, when it comes to, you know,
right.
plane fare and hotels and meals. And so, yeah, they're pretty good at, you know, trying to make sure that you're going to produce something.
Yeah, because I was telling you this before the show, as a PR person who's mostly worked with restaurants, I invite press to a lot of events, I do dinners, but I've never had a client that has a budget or even a desire to organize a whole press trip. And so I understand a bit about, you know, inviting people and expectations, but I just think when you're, this is just such more of an extreme experience.
Mm-hmm.
And expense
mm-hmm.
for a client to.
And when you invite people, do you expect them to produce something if they come to one of your dinners?
I'm realistic about expectations, and I think I discuss it with my clients that bringing people in does not guarantee. It usually doesn't guarantee press, and it doesn't guarantee good press too. But it's the idea of bringing them in and having them share the experience, and hopefully something will come out of it, whether it is a review, interview with the chef, a feature of a recipe, posting on social media. You want something to come of it, mm-hmm. but I don't think it's guaranteed, especially now it seems everyone's going to so many events and so many dinners, and there just aren't as many. I don't know. I think ideally it would be nice everyone that came in wrote about it, but mm-hmm. it just doesn't happen.
With a press trip, it's really expected
right.
to come through. Yeah,
I would think so. I mean, is that your take with when you are invited by someone like me to dinners? Or
I know that you would like something in return. I'm aware of that.
Well,
I know it's not just a free meal or a free drink. Yeah, I know. And I can just do less and less of that now. So, but yeah, I sympathize because you're doing a job. You have clients with expectations, and
yeah.
And so a lot of
being the middleman.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break here. We'll come right back. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
Welcome back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Julie Bessonin. She's the co-author of The Junketeers, Press Trip Thrills and Nightmares. So, Julie, what, with the book and with press trips you've been on, maybe could you take us through an example of like what it really does entail with maybe one of the memorable trips you've had or something that inspired one of the trips? Is it just wineries, dinners, like, how does it work? And are you with the same people everywhere you go, or do you have any downtime?
There's almost never downtime. Yes, you're with the same people, morning, noon, and night on buses. Almost every trip involves visiting some sort of distillery or winemaking operation or factory. So, you know, just kind of a joke that that becomes part of the trip, that I just never thought I'd see the inside of so many factories and distilleries, because they really want you to understand the process mm-hmm. of how things are made. I'm trying to think. One of my favorite trips was to Finland. I'm of Finnish heritage, and many years ago I got invited to Finland when they were just trying to, you know, attract more attention. So it was through the Finnish Tourist Board. That one wasn't to promote Finnish vodka or a product. It was just to promote the country. And so we went dog sledding. Just ate great Nordic food. It was at the beginning of the new Nordic food movement. And so we were introduced to all kinds of young, exciting chefs. I've been foraging for mushrooms and lingonberries. And so it's just very pleasurable. And when you get the itinerary before you go on a trip,
right.
And usually it will say, lunch and then free time, and then we'll meet up again for drinks in the hotel, and then we're going to go to dinner here, and then we're going to have drinks afterwards at this place. And that free time almost never happens. So I always had expectations that, oh, that's when I can look at my email, that's when I can respond to people I need to respond to, that's when I can call my husband. And almost always, mm-hmm. you know, things just expand. You know, wherever you go to tour, go to lunch, it always takes longer, or you get caught in a traffic jam or something. And so then all you can do is go back to your room, basically, and hurry and change clothes, or maybe brush your teeth, and then you run out again. So you have to have a lot of stamina for these trips. They're not for wusses.
Yeah, there was a comment in the book by, I think, Sherry's character about how she sleeps 8 hours typically, but on press trips it's 5.
Yeah. You have to get by on a lot less sleep and just have high energy, because you're being, and there's so much stimulation, though usually it does help keep you awake.
Yeah, well, the question, so last week I had on Piché Ong. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've
met, sure.
You know Piché.
He's great.
Yeah.
I love Piché.
We had a really fun show. And I asked him to ask you a question, and he first kind of gave a tip, and we phrased it into a question, because he wanted to know, he thinks, you know, when you travel, you should do what the locals do as much as possible and embrace their culture. So the question was, do you do what the locals do? And I'm thinking, well, when you're these trips are designed to kind of do what the locals are doing, but I guess, and you don't have any time to do mm-hmm. things on your own. I mm-hmm. mean, is that sort of how it goes.
Yeah, it's very hard to get away and do any of your own reporting because they really do like to keep the group together. And on some of the better press trips or the best press trips, they do try to show you how where the locals go to eat or where the local watering holes are, and not just the places that are their partners. Or, you know, because I think a lot of times with press trips, they pull together several sponsors because it is such an enormous expense. And because if American Airlines gives a discount on the tickets, it means you might have to go meet with American Airlines people and, you know, watch a PowerPoint lecture about their new routes. So you end up doing a lot of things like that where I like to be a reporter. I like to go off and find my own stories. Mm-hmm. I'm very independent. And so it can be frustrating, too, when all of your time is spoken for and you're just being fed information. And, you know, you can't go off on your own and find, you know, and be with the locals that much. But
right.
But I am a night owl, and so what I used to tend to do is that would be the time that we would finally have some free time by midnight or something. Mm-hmm. And there was nothing left on the agenda, and then I would try to go to a local watering hole with some of the other people, the other night owls on the trip. And Sherry de Borgrove was one of those night owls.
And then you're going on the 3 hours sleep.
Yeah, I got 3 hours of sleep, yes.
Yeah, I get it. So this gets me back to my expectation question. So if you go on a trip and you have to meet with, or you lovingly meet with American Airlines, or you get presented and you go to all these restaurants, then are you expected to write something about American Airlines?
Well, I bet American Airlines would like that. and sometimes it can just happen in such a way that if you're doing a travel story, if there's a box that you can include, just an info box, you can say American Airlines has flights from JFK to Honolulu, you know, nonstop, starting at, you know, $679, you know, something like that. But I'm not going to, you know, go into a whole thing about American Airlines and a travel story. I have some integrity, so no, I wasn't able to. But I think American Airlines would like that. Yeah.
Well, they're going to like my show. I'm plugging them here. Oh, so funny. Well, what about, I mean, thrills, nightmares that come from this, from that inspired the book? I mean, did anything ever, has anyone ever left a press trip? Like, it was, they just, this isn't for me, and they went, they just jetted off, took a plane back?
Well, never on anything that I experienced, but I have heard stories of people on a trip going AWOL and ending up in jail.
Ooh.
You get sent home if you end up in jail.
I would think so.
Yeah. I heard about someone once who went a little nutty and had to also be sent home for some medical treatment. And, you know, you hear stories about people that can't take the intensity of it. I think some it really can test you in a number of ways, and some people it's not good for them to be on the schedule and getting 4 hours of sleep and being around the same people all day every day and having all this information being presented. And so it can show some people at their best and some people at their worst.
I could see that, and I think, I mean, there's pros and cons to it. You're going on this trip that's paid for by someone else, and you get to see the world. I mean, it seems Sherry really...
Oh, Sherry has really seen mm-hmm. the world. Sherry has been to so many exotic places, so many islands, places I've never heard of. Yeah, it's really amazing, and she still is traveling constantly. I think she is going to Rioja next. And she's been to just about every wine region in the world, you know, the great thing about it is that you get to stay in really nice hotels, you eat really well, you meet interesting people. And a lot of times journalists can't afford these trips on their own, and a lot of the travel magazines have folded or don't have budgets anymore. So I think it's a challenge for magazines and newspapers, too, to get people to take these trips and that they have to pay for themselves oftentimes, because other magazines and newspapers have ethics policies, too, where you can't accept a press trip, and then, you know, but then also don't have the budget. So the writer might just be pitching trips that he or she is taking anyway, and then maybe you get a little bit of a budget. But I did a travel story once where I think the budget that the newspaper gave me was only $150, you know, and I was going there anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, a lot of journalists just can't afford to do that. So they have to take press trips if they want to see the world.
Yeah, I've been traveling a lot on my own, and I pitched a story to Fathom just because I was going anyway to Queenstown and New Zealand and Australia, and I know Pavia there, and I was like, what do you think? Maybe I could write a story for you. And I ended up writing a story on it for her. But that was, I was going anyway.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's the thing. That's the travel stories I do now if I'm going anyway, mm-hmm. because they're just, most of the places I work don't have budgets.
Yeah, because the travel writers I do know that go on trips, they're usually writing for Travel and Leisure or Bon Appetit or people, or, you know, that have the budget to send mm-hmm. them. Mm-hmm. And then they come up with these huge articles, very, mm-hmm. you know, thinking of David Farley, who went to India for a while, like, just on his own and wrote
a
story.
Yeah, he's a great travel writer.
Yeah he is. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, I've never been on a press trip. We'll see if I ever, I don't know if it's in my future, but I would certainly give it a try.
They're fascinating.
Yeah. About how long are they typically? Like a week?
Typically a week, yeah, but I used to go on ones that were, you know, 3 days or something, so they can be shorter too, and probably the longest one I've ever been on was 10 days. Because most people just can't be gone that long when you're a working writer, and mm-hmm. you know, you got to get home and write. Yeah. You got to make some money, because you don't make any money while you're on these trips. And for freelancers, I'm always working.
You can't be doing, as you said, you don't have time to be doing work or anything else. Your focus, that's why you're there.
Right. Right.
Oh, it's
right. You give them your full attention when you're there.
Well, it's very cool, and I can't wait to finish reading the book, because I know there's so many more stories in there, and already I've been, it's like I'm taking little notes on the side, but little tidbits and fun.
There's
fun
a lot
stories.
Of advice in there.
Yeah. There is good advice on dating.
On dating, on men, on food, travel, different parts of the world. And we were wondering, for a long time we weren't sure what to call it. Sherry came up with the title of The Junketeers, which I liked immediately, but then other people, you know, disagreed, and we thought, you know, at one point we were going to call it The Ones, because with each one of the trips, there always is somebody difficult. There's always somebody. And the joke is if you're on a trip and there's not someone who's the one, if everyone seems to be congenial and easygoing, then it's
you. Then it's you.
And in the book, in The Junketeers, at one point, my character is the one. And that's a very difficult position to be in.
I can't wait to finish reading it. Awesome. All right, we're going to take another break here, and we're going to come back. We'll do my speed round game and talk some industry news. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer. My guest today is Julie Besnin. She is the co-author of The Junketeers. And it's time for my speed round game. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
So pretty much I'm going to name two things, such as chocolate or vanilla, and you just pick your favorite, or you pick your preference, or whatever comes to mind.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. Eat in or eat out?
Eat in.
Wine, beer, or cocktail?
Cocktail.
Tasting menu or a la carte?
A la carte.
You're great at this. Quick. Small plates or large plates?
Small plates.
Tipping or all-inclusive charge?
Tipping.
Communal table or chef's counter?
Chef's counter.
Food, wine, or travel writing?
Food, wine, or travel writing? Food.
Press trips that are less than 7 days or more?
Less.
Yeah, I figured that's where you're going. Carry-on or checked luggage?
Carry-on.
How about a trip with young people, old people, or does it matter?
Young people.
That cracked me up at the beginning of the book.
Yeah, that's one of my co-author's theories, is you don't want old people on a trip. And for one thing, they could die.
Well, that was where I was like...
Yeah, so that's bad.
Okay.
But the other thing is Sherry firmly believes that people should live in the moment, and she thinks old people live in the past. And so that's why she also likes to be around young people. And yeah, that cracked me up. She cracks me up all the time.
Yeah, it was good. Okay, two more. Cheese plate or dessert?
Cheese plate.
Manhattan or Brooklyn?
I'm a Manhattanite. I love coming to Brooklyn, but I am a Manhattanite.
Cool. Great. That was the game.
Oh.
So now let's talk some industry news. One thing I noted this week, it was on Eater Chicago. The Trotter Project, nonprofit, is starting, they're resurrecting Charlie Trotter's space, and it's a nonprofit that's being started by one of the alum, or a few of the alumni, because Charlie Trotter passed away 7 months ago, and I don't know if you know this, but I worked for him.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I did back in 97, 98. So when I saw the news, I was shocked. I'm still shocked. But I read this and I was very happy to see that this is what they're deciding to do, because the restaurant is they were saying they might try and do like a James Beard House sort of experience, or make it, it's a townhouse. It has that feel of the James Beard House. So they were thinking of making it in Chicago, like a gathering place, and run this nonprofit out of it. And I just thought it was a really nice thing to be doing.
Oh, yeah. He was a seminal figure, so that's wonderful.
Yeah. Did you ever dine there?
No. I regret to say I never dined there, and I never met him either. I was still shocked to see he died, and I always hoped that I would get there and get... But
yeah, he was incredible, and he inspired so many people. And actually, all these alumni that are involved... Almost all of them have their own restaurant or working somewhere else in Chicago now or elsewhere. So you can go to one of their places.
Okay. That's how I'll pay tribute to them then.
Yeah. No, this looks cool. They said they're giving back to the community. They're going to have an indoor farm. They're going to have some events. There's something called the Trotter Project called Savor, which is September 4th. And It just seemed like a nice idea to me, so mm-hmm. I was excited to read that.
Yeah.
Okay, so another news topic is in the New York Times, the article, Getting a Good Table by Flicking an App, No Greasing a Palm. It was by Julia Moskin, because mm-hmm. restaurant reservations has been a hot topic.
Mm-hmm. I read that story. It was really interesting, and it's so not the way I go out to eat. I almost never make reservations, and... I usually just like to show up and sit and eat at the bar, and I do have to eat at so many restaurants a month, so it's a job for me to eat, mm-hmm. even though I love to eat. There's nothing I like to do more. But if I'm also having to fight for reservations, or, you know, and it seems like every time I do look at Open Table, they have 5:30 or 10:30, you know, if it's a new restaurant that I want to eat at. And so a lot of times I just go and take my chances and sit at the bar, and if something opens up. So it's not for me. It's for people who have expense accounts, or for, you know, because with some of them, there's going to be a charge, right?
Well, you know, I'm like you, and even with my solo dining, that's typically what I do. I go by myself. I sit at the bar mm-hmm. as a walk-in, and you, especially when you're by yourself, you can usually get in, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. I like doing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think to your point with Open Table, and when you do go to a hot restaurant and there isn't a good time slot, mm-hmm. it's only 5:30 or 10, I think like this new app coming that just came out, Resy, they're offering from restaurants, let's say, an 8 o'clock reservation at the hot restaurant, and you, it's supposed to be like 10% of what the charge would be per person. So it would be like $10 or $30 or based on the time of day. But so if you want to go, you spend $30 and then you can dine there at 8 o'clock.
I think there'll be people who will do it, but it will not be me.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to see. I think there will, too. I just think it's been a lot of talk. I mean, OpenTable just got bought by Priceline for $2.6 billion.
Wow, yeah.
That's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see, but there's just been a lot of articles about restaurant reservations.
Yeah, and there were several companies that were doing it, so it'll be interesting to see which ones last, too, which ones have the best business model and what people are willing to pay for. I don't know.
Yeah, well, I reached out to Ben Leventhal, who's one of the founders of Resy. Uh-huh. I asked him to come on the show, and he said he wanted to come on in September. And at first I was thinking, September's so far away, and then I realized it's 2 months from now. Like, we're in June. So I'm excited he's going to come on. And I think maybe he didn't tell me why, but I'm thinking, you know, they're in beta now. Maybe they want to see, you know, how it goes and how they adjust to it before he starts talking more about it.
Yeah, they can work out the kinks maybe by then.
Right. Well, so we'll see about that. And then
food is just such a thing now. You know, it's just so funny that people are willing to pay for these reservations now.
We're in a good industry.
Yeah, and I think when I started, it wasn't such a thing.
Yeah, no, it's definitely become hotter and bigger, and everyone has an interest in food and is taking pictures of food and wants to go to the hot restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I'm walking down the street, I hear people talking about restaurants. You know, before I used to hear more people talking about movies or...
Yeah, I was on the train.
Music, and now everybody's talking about restaurants.
I was on the train the other day, and I heard these people talking about how they had to go to Smorgasburg. You know, and I was like, and they didn't look like industry people, but it was like, oh, we have to go there. Like, they had a friend visiting from out of town.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
yeah, they have lists of restaurants now, some of the shows that they take out of towners to.
Yeah, well, it's very cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the last article I had was on Grub Street. It had how Starbucks announced that they're planning to fund college education for thousands of workers. And it was also on The Daily Show. I saw a little segment on it with Jon Stewart. They had on Howard Schultz talking about this. And I think it's the first American restaurant that is doing this, offering college tuition to their employees.
Well, I read a little bit more about this, and I think it's really a brilliant marketing move. But one of the things I read was that to qualify, these Starbucks employees have to complete 21 credits at Arizona State University online, which means about 7 courses before they're eligible, and those 21 credits would cost $10,000. And the Starbucks reimbursement means that they're not eligible for other financial aid. And it's only for this specific online program. So I was wondering if, in a way, this means Starbucks has gone into business with Arizona State University. So
I'm
a little bit skeptical about this because I don't know how many Starbucks employees who work 20 hours a week have $10,000 to spend before they get some sort of reimbursement. It's a nice idea, and I know that Starbucks does pay their employees, I think, better than other chains.
I think they're very employee-friendly, and they try to give them...
And they give health care and stuff, so there are certainly good things about it. But
well, we'll see how it plays out. I mean, it was just announced, and it's a huge expense, and I think you're right. It is a marketing tool for them as well. But I think that's always what they've done. I mean, there's Starbucks everywhere now. They've been so smart with their marketing and... And expansion.
Oh, yeah. They started that whole big coffee craze, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
But they have a lot more competition now, so this is something that can get Howard Schultz on the talk shows again. So that's good. It is a smart marketing move.
Yeah, well, cool. All right. So that was my industry news. So we're going to take one more break, and we're going to come back. I'm going to do my solo dining experience. So stay with us. This is All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network.
Thank you.
Back to All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Sherry Bayer, and it's time for my solo dining experience of the week. Okay, so this past weekend, the weather here in New York City was gorgeous, and I hopped on a city bike, and I took a ride down to Hudson Eats, which is at the new Brookfield Place in Battery Park City. And it was in the morning. It was my mission was to check out Black Seed Bagels, which opened a second location there. The original. It opened like a month ago. The original is on Elizabeth Street.
And they are good bagels. Yeah.
They are good bagels, uh-huh. And that I had read that the Elizabeth Street location, people were waiting hours to get bagels.
People are crazy.
I'm crazy enough I wanted to try it, but I got on the bike. I went down there. There was no line. And I had their salmon signature sandwich and on an everything bagel and their cold-pressed Stumptown coffee, and it was awesome. I mean, it's a bit pricey, though. I spent over $16 on the bagel and coffee. I realized that was a lot, I think, on...
I think that's the same sandwich I got at their Elizabeth Street location. It was maybe $11, which is high for a bagel sandwich.
Yeah, it was great. It was delicious. I think their bagel is they're going for this Montreal style, which is a little denser than New York
dense,
bagels.
But not as, I've had them in Montreal and they're not as sweet as Montreal bagels, but they are denser than normal, and they're smaller.
They are smaller. I think I read that they're trying to be a cross between a Montreal and a American bagel.
Mm-hmm. No, and I went to an off hour. I didn't have to wait at all. And it's a very good bagel, but waiting hours for a bagel York?
Not up for that. But this was great. And so this recently opened Hudson Eats, and it's a European-style marketplace. And there's Mighty Quinn's Chopped, Dos Toros, Umami Burger. There's lots of places. And I don't know, have you been down there?
I have not, no.
I beat you to it. Figured maybe you went to a press event. it's got lots of windows overlooking the Hudson, so it's a very lovely place to sit. Despite there was lots of babies and tourists there, still had a lovely time. So if anyone wants to check it out, their website's blackseedbagels.com, and we enjoyed their bagels.
Definitely. I would love to eat more of them.
Cool. Okay, so we're at the end of the show, but before we close, I would like to see, Julie, if you can ask a question for my guest next week. So I'm having on a spice expert. It is Lior Lev Sercars. I'm hoping that's how you say his name. He is this amazing spice guru. He used to work for Danielle, and now he has a little shop that he sells biscuits and spices. Do you know him?
I don't.
He's cool.
I looked him up, though, when you told me he was going to be her next guest. Yeah, he looks great.
So what should I ask him?
I would like to know if there is a difference in flavor with biodynamic and organic spices as opposed to conventional spices.
That is like a serious question.
Into biodynamics, especially lately. And I know that, you know, some companies, like I think Van Leeuwen Ice Cream, they use some biodynamic spices in their flavors. And I just think it's an interesting movement. And so I want to know if there's a difference in flavor.
Oh, I'm very curious, too. And that is not something I was planning to ask him, so thank
you.
You can. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Julie, for coming out here today.
Really, my pleasure.
It's been fun chatting with you about your book. You're the co-author of The Junketeers. And anyone who wants to check it out, you can download it. It's an e-book.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And you don't need a Kindle.
You don't need a Kindle.
No, it's on Amazon, and I think it makes it look like you need to buy a Kindle, but you do not need a Kindle to download it. You can download it on any electronic device.
Got it. I downloaded it, and I'm using it on my iPad through Kindle.
Mm-hmm.
It's $2.99. It's
it
a
looks
steal.
Better if it's on a Kindle. But yeah, $2.99. We want everyone to be able to read it.
Yeah. So.
And we have a website, too, thejunketeers.com, that has more information.
Yes. So, people, please check that out. It's a fascinating read, Press Trip Thrills and Nightmares.
Thank you.
And also, I saw you're on Twitter, Junketeers NYC.
We just started that page, and we need to start tweeting.
Cool. Well, I tweeted you guys. And
oh, thank you.
I'm on Twitter at All Industry, at Sherry Bayer, and at Bayer PR. My website's bayerpublicrelations.com.
We will follow you.
Awesome. Awesome. We'll be social media friends. Okay, so anyone who's missed this, if you miss any of our live broadcasts, you can find us archived on heritageradionetwork.org. We're also on Stitcher and iTunes. Thanks to my engineer, Liz. Thanks to Julie Bessonin, who joined me today. And to everyone out there listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode of All in the Industry on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sherry Bayer, and I'll be back next Wednesday at 4 with another live show. I hope you'll tune in then. Okay, bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Everybody.